discussing the ideas, the challenges, and the technology of the crypto economy. This is a Crypto Economy Chat. All right, guys, welcome back to the Crypto Economy Podcast. We have a crypto chat today. If you've been listening to recent episodes and or saw on my Twitter feed, we will be chatting with Nick Bhatia today. And he is the author of the episode where we did the Bitcoin risk spectrum. That was his article on Medium, and along with a number of others, so I encourage you to check that one out. I will post the link, and his tag is at time value of BTC. But his article and a number of things that he's written about so far have been about something he calls the Lightning Network reference rate. And if you have not listened to that episode, I encourage you to do so. It's a really cool concept that I really wanted to explore further and kind of get his take on a number of different things and what it might look like to build a new set of financial markets on top of Bitcoin as an underlying asset. So without further ado, we will go ahead and jump in to our crypto chat with Nick Bhatia. All right, we are live. Welcome to the show, Nick Bhatia. Is that how do you pronounce your name, by the way?
Bhatia? That is correct.
Oh, perfect, perfect. I guessed and got it right. Well, welcome to the show, man. It's really good to have you on.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah. So let's talk about, like, this has been just a really, really interesting concept to me. And it's funny because it just seems like a clarification of, like, kind of provably like standardizing the return. For anybody who let's start a little bit back. For anybody who hasn't listened to the episode where I read your article on the Bitcoin risk spectrum, and I have not yet covered the one before that, why don't we go over just the overview of what the Lightning Network reference rate is, which is a thing that's been kind of blowing up recently, and your tag, the time value of Bitcoin, and just kind of that whole concept. Why don't you give me an introduction for the people who don't know about it?
So I'm trying to make simply an observation here and then some suggestions as someone who loves Bitcoin, is a Bitcoin maximalist, and as someone who works in the financial industry. I think I have some ideas here that might work for Bitcoin. So the observation is that the Lightning Network can be used to calculate the time value of Bitcoin in a short time horizon. Mm-hmm. So to calculate an interest rate, you need principal, cash flows, and time. And the Lightning Network has all three of those things. The principal is the Bitcoin in your payment channels. Mm-hmm. The income is are the routing fees that you collect by routing Bitcoin payments through the Lightning Network. Mm-hmm. And the time is the block time it takes to do so.
Okay.
And we can calculate an interest rate from these observable variables in Lightning Network. Now, what we can do with that calculation is really up for grabs. And that's what, you know, I'm here to do, is suggest some things that we can do with that interest rate in order to grow Bitcoin's capital market from what is right now, from the on-chain perspective, basically HODL. HODL mm-hmm. is the only on-chain use case of Bitcoin mm-hmm. at the moment. The rest of the use cases of Bitcoin are off-chain as far as trying to make income from it. So that's going to be your off-chain lending, exchange-based lending. My observation is that if we can calculate the on-chain time value of Bitcoin using the Lightning Network, we can start to determine what functionally in the traditional capital markets would be the risk-free rate, which is basically a baseline rate for loans to reference. And that's what Lightning Network Reference Rate is, LNRR. It's my proposal to take an average of the interest rates that Lightning nodes earn through time and come up with some sort of average as just an observable variable. Now, some of the things that I want to mention, first of all, the Lightning Network is not risk-free.
Mm-hmm.
There are risks associated with the security of keeping your Bitcoin in hot wallets. And also, there's a lot of payment channel management risk, which is basically, you know, your funds can get stolen from you if you don't manage your payment channels properly and execute your HTLCs properly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's, you know, that's the first thing, is that it's not a risk-free rate. It's just that that's the language that traditional finance uses for reference rates.
Gotcha.
The second thing is that, you know, this is not a centralized type of solution or proposal. This idea only works if everything is done from the development standpoint, is done from a decentralized manner. If the rates are all cryptographically provable and we don't have to trust anybody to verify these rates.
Mm-hmm.
That's the general idea, is to go along with the ethos of Bitcoin, which is keeping everything transparent, open source, verifiable, don't have to trust any third party.
Yeah. Yeah.
The rest of the off-chain lending that can happen after that, or is already happening, you know, exchange lending, direct lending,
mm-hmm.
That all requires trust, and that's not what I'm focused on.
Gotcha. Gotcha. And it doesn't even seem like with, because Lightning Network, I saw a lot of that blow up on Twitter was just a bunch of people from Bitcoin Cash and or just Bitcoin haters talking about how this was some sort of LIBOR, like fractional reserve interest rate manipulation scheme. What would you kind of say as an answer to that? I mean, I don't quite see any real connection to that. It just seems like a standardized way to essentially prove a return on running a Lightning node with optimal channel management. But what would you say to that, basically?
That's right. And, you know, as someone that is new in the public sphere on Twitter, mm-hmm. it was so apparent to me immediately, you know, the arguments against this are coming from the standpoint, they're just not coming from an educated background.
Yeah.
They're making accusations of the Lightning Network that aren't, you know, just factually false. And I've actually realized pretty quickly that it's kind of this targeted propaganda against Bitcoin that happened to me from all different angles, like all of a sudden. And you can tell the pattern of the people on Twitter, the people that like the tweets, their handles and their names and their avatars. It's all kind of a very similar, they follow a similar pattern. And so, mm-hmm. you know, it's kind of pretty easy to see that it's some sort of propaganda operation, to be honest with you.
You know, I'm still on the fence about that. Like, I see so many people in particularly some of these coins. I mean, maybe it is, you know, like it's certainly possible. But some of these people are so devoted, and I know the feeling, you know, like I, you know, you get in love with one of these coins or something, you know, I feel defensive when somebody calls Bitcoin stupid or something. And I honestly think the Lightning Network is a pretty serious threat to the very idea of Bitcoin Cash as a means of payment, just because it's a payment network. The blockchain it's got a lot of limitations that are not good for payment networks, at least in my opinion. And the layered approach is so, the benefits you get from something like Lightning, and then to add to it, the idea that there is no counterparty risk, but you're putting up a principal usable by another party, like to route fees through your liquidity, essentially, it's so funny that it was just the way of thinking about it when you put it that way in the article that I was like, God, that's awesome, because that's exactly what it is. It really could provide a base rate for essentially how to what the risk level is when offering up principal actually with counterparty risk to compare to. I just thought that was, I really appreciated your article. I thought it was really cool.
Well, I'm glad that you enjoyed it. And I, you know, it came from a few places. The first thing was when I heard Andreas Antonopoulos answer a Q&A about Lightning many months ago. Mm-hmm. And he described this concept of being able to earn interest on your Lightning node for routing fees. So yeah. The, you know, that concept, you know, sparked something for me. And then later on, when I read the Lightning white paper, mm-hmm. the phrase time value is mentioned 6 times in that paper. And, you know, I trade interest rates for a living for a financial institution. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it all kind of came together for me that this is something unique. And let me try to observe this and explain it to people. And, you know, I'm not a coder and I can't read for you the Lightning code, but I, yeah. You know, people, you know, experts have explained this and written a lot about it. And I do understand, I think, the mechanisms in the payment channels that make sure that Bitcoin can be yours if you properly execute your smart contracts. Mm-hmm. And that is the unique thing here. It's that, you know, if you mismanage your channels, you can lose your Bitcoin. Or if you have poor security practices and keep your private keys, you know, secured improperly when it's online, you can lose your Bitcoin too. Yeah. But the power is actually really in your hands. And that's the difference here. And that's the game changer.
Yeah. Yeah. It really does like kind of turn the risk, risk exposure on its head. Like you're not exposed to the risk of someone else. Essentially, you're exposed to the risk of your own negligence, essentially.
It's a brand new type of way to think about income.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Actually, on that note, I think that's in your most recent that you literally just posted a couple hours ago. Of course, when this airs, it will probably be last week. I'm not 100% sure when this will come out. You were talking about how the only quote unquote counterparty risk that might be involved is malicious counterparty risk regarding the possibility of losing the balance of your channel if somebody publishes a malicious close to the channel and you are not there. Essentially, you're not present to compete it with the valid state. I was curious, do you know about the L2 proposal?
No, tell me.
Okay, so the L2 proposal is by Christian Decker and
Blockstream. Of course. I did read the Blockstream proposal. I didn't remember it as L2. But it's the process of adding these kind of watchtowers built into the network. The
L2 proposal itself is not about the watchtowers. There is something called the Wire protocol that's trying to figure out the protocol for talking to watchtowers and essentially setting up that service as a decentralized service on the network. L2, and that's actually ELTOO, which is just a play on the layer 2 acronym. They're actually proposing what would be a new script called SIGHASH no input. But what it allows essentially is that where right now a competing transaction runs the risk of losing all of the funds in the channel, like essentially there's a punishment clause. It actually changes that risk spectrum by so that if you have bad backups, essentially, the SIGHASH no input actually creates a clearer sequence of previous states of that Lightning channel. And both parties, the problem right now is that the two different contracts are asymmetric. Everybody holds a half signed version of it. So if you lose your version of the state, you can't get it back, essentially. The other person just has to broadcast theirs and you have to hope that they're being honest. But in L2 with the new script, they would actually hold the exact same copy. And if somebody broadcasts the old state, they can actually just broadcast the valid state and it would just clear everything out. It removes the punishment and just makes it so that the most recent state will simply wipe out the old state without it. Actually mitigates a lot of that malicious counterparty risk by making it much easier to maintain a backup. That's actually one thing I'm really excited about. I hope I explained that relatively well.
So from my understanding, then there's no longer any need to broadcast an anti-cheat transaction because the transaction sequence does it for you. Is that?
In a sense, all you have to do is have the valid state because right now you have to have the key to every previous state. So like, let's say we have a channel and it updates 10,000 times. You have to keep 10,000 transaction IDs and previous keys because each key is revoked individually. So if your malicious counterparty broadcasts state 840 of 10,000, you have to grab transaction ID and state 840 to contest it, which, you know, for 10,000 Lightning transactions might be 2 megabytes worth of data. It's nothing because it's just an ID and a key. But still, you do have to have a full backup of everything. With L2, all you have to have is the valid state. And it's hierarchically deterministic. They're all derived from the previous one. So the most recent can actually cryptographically prove that it is further in line than number 840. And rather than just wiping out the whole channel, the valid state just gets published. And there's no punishment. There's no nothing. It's just valid states replace old states. End of story. So it really mitigates a lot of the problems of bad backups and poorly managed nodes. And if you're with let's say your node crashes or something, and you're with an honest node, they can actually give you the backup for the channel state. So let's say you lose yours entirely. You can just ask the party that you have a channel with. I mean, granted, that's a trust situation, but you know, you let your node crash and didn't have a backup. So, but that one's, I'm really excited about because I think that will really change. I think that will have a significant impact on the actual risk management of the nodes and decrease the likelihood of total loss and the impact or the degree to which a malicious actor can actually screw things up.
Well, that is great news. And in my article, I outline how I don't believe there's direct counterparty default risk. Mm-hmm. I identify two risks. One is security risk and the other is payment channel management risk. And what you're describing with the new way of hierarchical deterministic transactions, you know, it sounds like the payment channel management risk is going to decrease even at the margin. Yeah. And, you know, that is why I'm working on Bitcoin and nothing else, is because the development, I can't keep up with it. I'm definitely not a computer science expert. So it takes me, you know, months to catch up with trying to understand all the brilliant development that goes on.
Yeah.
And these things are so exciting. And yeah, what you just said is, you know, going to take out some of that payment channel management risk that we talk about and just reduce it even more.
Yeah. I'm really excited about that in particular. Quick question. Let me go back to, you said that you work in finance, correct?
That's right.
What you said, you work for a financial institution for trading interest rates. Is that right?
That's right. So all my work on Bitcoin is my own. It's not associated with my firm, you know, they are, you know, supportive of me doing academic work on Bitcoin. And so I'm happy to be, you know, giving some independent thought out here about some of my ideas with capital markets. And yeah, I trade US Treasuries and other interest rate futures for an asset manager. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I'm involved in the fixed income capital markets on a day-to-day basis. And I have a lot to learn from, you know, all the great people that I work with and my counterparties on Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love global macroeconomics. That's my passion. Mm-hmm. I think Bitcoin falls right into it. But I also do love the traditional markets. And, you know, that's what I follow and trade every day.
Cool. I saw you posting about this is something that you seem to know a lot about, and I have not even heard about this until I just saw it hit Twitter the other day. Was the CFA Institute? I believe I saw a comment that you said you were a charter holder with them. Is that right?
That is correct.
Okay. And they have added, the big comment is that these things are here and they're not going away, that everybody keeps quoting. And it's been added as part of the curriculum, but I got to admit, I don't really know anything about the CFA, or, I mean, I get like a vague idea. Can you expand on that and tell me about the kind of the impact you think that's having, and like how important is this, and what is this institute exactly?
Sure. So the CFA stands for a Chartered Financial Analyst. Mm-hmm. And the CFA Institute issues charters to people that pass three levels of exams that are given, the second and third are given only once a year. And it is a very highly regarded designation in the asset management industry. So it's for investment professionals, portfolio managers, research analysts, and these are the types of people that try to attain their charter. And it covers multiple asset classes, equities, fixed income, derivatives. There's economics on there. There's statistical analysis. There are alternative investments like private equity, venture capital. Mm-hmm. Those are covered less so than the larger markets. But I do anticipate that, you know, this new blockchain and cryptocurrency section will fall into that alternative investment portion of the curriculum. So I think there are, you know, 10, 12 parts to the curriculum for each level. And so it's very exciting. I'll just tell you my thoughts on it. Mm-hmm. I think that this is a big deal because you're going to have investment professionals coming out of the CFA program in 3, 4, 5 years that are going into very high levels of asset management. And they will now see Bitcoin as a legitimate portfolio allocation for large institutional money. So we're going way past now hedge funds, although there are plenty of CFA charter holders at hedge funds as well. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that there are many at venture capital firms and angel investment firms. But, you know, we're talking about now cities, governments, large insurance companies, S&P 500 companies, you know, that type of size of money, mm-hmm. those are the people that employ the CFA charter holders.
Gotcha.
And so it's you know, what we call real money versus fast money. Mm-hmm. The fast money refers to hedge funds and the real money refers to asset managers. Mm-hmm. So it's the asset management side that is going to be employing these people that have learned the curriculum. Now, does that mean the adoption of Bitcoin is just going to skyrocket as soon as these people hit those firms? No, it doesn't. I don't want to get carried away here. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it is a big deal. And it's actually very validating for someone like me who is a CFA charter holder and, you know, is also a Bitcoin maximalist and here to see Bitcoin be the future of money. And I hope that they cover some of the Bitcoin, some of the roots of Bitcoin and some of the, some of the history of it. I'm not so sure they will, but I'm sure that people will end up finding out about Bitcoin, reading the white paper, reading some of the work of the cypherpunks, and then hopefully reading some Austrian economics off of the back of it. And really, you know, trying to understand what Bitcoin is. So it's going to increase adoption. That's the bottom line here. But it's very exciting for me, you know, personally as a CFA charter holder.
Yeah. Yeah. It seemed like a really, do you know what degree actually that they like, like for an asset management thing, would they actually go into like specific technological like risk management of holding these assets? Is that kind of the thing that they might cover?
So I have no knowledge of what the curriculum is going to cover, but if I were to guess, they will probably cover how a blockchain works. You know, they'll, I mean, I would assume that they're going to cover, you know, what the ledger is, how it updates, what mining is. I think that you would have to explain these things if you're going to, you know, describe a blockchain, which, you know, as we know, a blockchain is a chain of blocks. So it, you have to understand what blocks are, you have to understand what a chain is and how things are chained together. And so I would assume they're going to talk about that, but then they'll also talk about how, you know, it's a high risk, new technology, and, you know, you should keep a small allocation and not let it get out of hand. I know they're also going to cover some other fintech type of things like machine learning and, you know, other non-Bitcoin related things.
Gotcha. I feel like it, I could imagine that something like that, particularly someone with that interest, like Bitcoin and cryptocurrency would be like a natural just playground of excitement and stuff, specifically in regards to that, because I mean, I'm an economics geek too, and it just utterly fascinated me that it's like a closed economic loop of so many different factors and characteristics. And it's like designed to be a little economy in and of itself, you know, like there's so many interworking pieces adding to the security, the like just how mining and users and full nodes and transactions all interact was so fascinating to me. I imagine there's probably a CFAs or probably a bunch of them would charter holders or whatever probably geek out on this really hard.
Well, I think that there are some out there, but it's still, you know, very early in Bitcoin's life, and you know, in the traditional capital markets, there are definitely some people that have done the deep dive, the proverbial deep dive, but most haven't. And you know,
still getting
100% of people have heard of Bitcoin now. 100% of people are aware that there are multiple cryptocurrencies, but it's, you know, the numbers are not very large when you're talking about the number of people that have, you know, even read a chapter of Andreas Antonopoulos's Mastering Bitcoin. You're just not gonna find very many of them.
Yeah, definitely.
Yet.
Yeah, I think we've just hit. I think this previous bubble just kind of hit the presence of this thing exists. Here it is, and now everybody's looking at it and it's like, all right, so what the hell is this thing? And you know, everybody's trying to decide, is this a real thing? Is it going away? I thought it was a scam. Didn't it die 2 years ago? So it's really exciting, and it's been absolutely crazy. How, if you don't mind my asking, how long have you been, when did you first find Bitcoin?
I did my deep dive in 2016.
Okay.
But I had been aware of Bitcoin for, you know, a few years before that from, you know, certain Austrian economics, you know, places on the internet. And but I just never made the technical deep dive. And I think until you do that and you don't understand how Bitcoin works, you can't grasp it.
Yeah.
If you don't try, you're not going to. And so I look at it kind of as very black and white. Yeah, I wish I had read the white paper, you know, years, you know, in the years when I first heard the word Bitcoin, but I didn't until 2016. But you know, I fell down the rabbit hole, and I still haven't come out yet.
Cool. Yep. That's pretty much where we all are, I think. And I'm glad you found it, because I think I'm excited to see what you come up with. I'm glad to have your mind in the space. I think this is exciting.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. There was something, ETF proposal. I wanted to get your thoughts on it. Being in finance and everything, what's your thoughts on the recent CBOE ETF proposal? What do you see maybe what's your predictions on how that plays out? You think it will get approved this time?
I'm not sure about this one this time. Mm-hmm. But I do think ETF approval is, you know, it's eventually going to happen. Mm-hmm. You know, I would say sooner than later. It's not going to be 5 years before you get a Bitcoin ETF approved.
Yeah.
You know, the CME has done, I know that the CBOE is the new one that's awaiting approval, but mm-hmm. the CME has done such amazing work with Bitcoin over the last several years, you know, starting with their price index and then their futures contract, and really, really understanding. I've read some of their literature on Bitcoin, mm-hmm. and they get it over there in Chicago. They fully understand what Bitcoin is, and I consider them a pioneer in the traditional finance world when it comes to dealing with Bitcoin.
Interesting.
And so what I've seen from the CME makes me very optimistic about Bitcoin's role in the future of finance. You know, the CME is really at the center of the entire financial world as, you know, a clearinghouse that, you know, the volume would shatter anybody's, you know, brain as far as the daily volume that goes through that clearinghouse. And, you know, if the CME gets it, the NASDAQ is involved in a lot of these things. The CBOE has an ETF in for proposal. It's an eventuality. Bitcoin is coming. I'm not going to make any predictions on when and any specific ETFs, and I definitely don't have knowledge of you know, any of the goings on at the regulators, but it's definitely coming, and the custodial thing is very, very important. I know a lot of people say, oh, you know, it's not real Bitcoin, and I understand that. If you are buying Bitcoin to be you know, a sovereign individual and have sovereign money, that's what Bitcoin is for, and that's what you should do. But you know, the you know, government of some country or state or large insurance company is likely not going to be in charge of their own private keys at the beginning, at least.
Yeah,
they're gonna trust the people, like people associated with the CME, the CBOE, NASDAQ, etc., that have been working on this for 5 years already. They're going to trust them before themselves. Mm-hmm. So if somebody's going to come in with a $1 billion purchase of Bitcoin as, you know, some huge institution or government, it's likely they do so through these other avenues like ETFs. And you know, some ETFs are going to hold physical private keys. Some are only going to hold futures contracts. So, you know, they might be even two or three removed from the actual Bitcoin.
Interesting.
But I'm not sure how that's going to affect, you know, I'm not sure how that's what's going to lead what. Is it going to be the derivatives price that starts to lead the physical? I don't think so, because I know the CME price is a reference rate off of physical exchanges.
Yeah.
So. Yeah. I'm not really sure how the market is going to unfold. I'm not sure if institutions will buy the ETFs that have the private keys so that they have them, or do they want to avoid that private key management risk and just have the price exposure through the futures contracts? I'm not sure, but I'll definitely be watching it.
Yeah, that'll be really interesting. I've noticed with, I have to admit, haven't read any of the CME's like actual like write-ups or stuff about like content about Bitcoin, though it's been very clear that they've been ahead of the game against pretty much everybody as far as adopting and getting exposure to the traditional finance for Bitcoin and other crypto. But you're absolutely right, Dove. I've been talking about this for a long time, and I think everything is about key management right now. While I'm super excited, there is so much work going on for expanding the applications and like the utility of some of these things. And I think a lot of people are kind of getting in over their head. Like, I think it's an analogy I think I've used is it's the internet in 1980, and there are too many people right now trying to build Netflix, and it's just not going to work yet. And I think key management is so crucial. That's why I've been excited about stuff like Casa Hodl. Do you know, have you heard about Casa, the company?
Yeah. I know that, you know, James Sinlop went over there from his previous gig at BitGo. Yeah. And so, you know, I follow Lop just like most people out there in Bitcoin. Yeah. And I've been following what they're doing. I believe it's a 3 of 5 solution. Mm-hmm. And yeah, things like that are very important. Private key management is the foundation of Bitcoin. It doesn't work without it. And, you know, that's why I always say that the first point of the Bitcoin capital market is cold storage.
Yeah.
That anchors everything that comes after it, because that's actually the quote unquote risk-free asset in Bitcoin. It's holding your own private keys in a cold storage manner, generated in an offline way, you know, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So, you know, yes, I'm all about private key management being the absolute cornerstone here.
Yeah, and it will be really interesting to see how these, I think Casa is just kind of the tip of the iceberg and kind of that philosophy, and how you can branch that out into like shared key management where other services or essentially third parties can act as key restorers, but do not actually have custodianship of enough of the private key to actually make any expenditures with it. Like, so there's no, just like Casa is, like they hold a single of the five keys so that they can restore a key with your explicit signature. But they cannot actually spend anything, which it will be really interesting to see, probably more than anything, the regulatory aspects of quote unquote custodians that aren't actually in control of any coins, but serve that purpose essentially in the market. One thing you said though, that the ETF, could be based off of futures, rather than actually hold Bitcoin. I actually did not, and probably just my basic knowledge of what an ETF is, I thought you actually, for specifically an ETF, you did have to hold the underlying commodity or asset. Is that not true? You can base it off a futures?
Yeah, I believe that of the several ETF proposals, that there are both ETFs that will hold private keys, and there are ETFs that will hold CME or CBO futures contracts.
Okay.
And yes, that's definitely the case. I don't know them off the top of my head, but I don't know which one the CBO is. I should probably know that. But gotcha. There are both types, and I think that the regulators definitely have to treat both of them as unique situations. Mm-hmm. I mean, distinct from each other. The private key management one is going to have a ton of risk, and the futures one, you know, we don't really know how the futures price and the Bitcoin price are going to be correlated in the event of you know, a large amount of, you know, futures contracts being bought. Mm-hmm. You know, by these ETFs. I just don't think we know how that's going to unfold. And so I'll be watching, you know, how both of them behave.
Yeah, there's still that correlation is still up in the air. It's been interesting to see. Like, it's funny when I see these big moves and then I'm like, wait a second, I go check and, you know, CME futures just expired or something like that. So there's definitely seems to be some sort of a movement correlation with the expiration of some of these contracts. So it'll be really interesting to see how that plays out, like who's the leader and who's the follower kind of thing.
Exactly.
I think kind of inevitably the
the underlying like actual market, because Bitcoin is such a scarce asset. And I think it's kind of inevitable that that would have to lead the price, and the probably the futures contracts will come into play when something's deeply overbought or oversold. Like in the market, when we're so far out of equilibrium, that will work to push us back in the other direction. But I don't see it having any. I see the underlying, because it's a global, already like natively digital market. I find it highly unlikely that a lot of the claims of futures manipulating and just dictating what the Bitcoin price is kind of baseless, in my opinion. But
yeah, definitely right now the futures contracts reference an average of prices on exchanges where real Bitcoin is being bought and sold. So it's definitely, you know, the physical price that matters there.
Mm-hmm.
I do worry about if there are only, you know, ETFs that are buying futures contracts only, you're going to have this huge artificial long in the market that, you know, isn't actually buying any Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. And how does that affect it? That's not something that I think anybody knows yet how that's going to affect. But I'm going to be watching it.
Yeah, that'll definitely be fun to keep a close eye on and see how this plays. One thing real quick is you said SIBO. Is that actually how you pronounce that? I have always referred to it as CBOE, but I think I've only ever seen it in writing.
Yeah, you know, CBOE, it's, you know, four initials is too long for
most people,
for traders to say. So we call it SIBO.
I'll use the official pronunciation now.
No, but CBOE is is commonly used, and I think people on the financial media will spell the whole thing out, CBOE.
Okay, good. I don't feel stupid anymore. What are your thoughts on? So like Gemini has proposed an ETF. I feel like I saw a list at some point that there were actually a lot of ETFs being requested essentially. How does, in your experience with regulators and kind of how all that stuff unfolds, like is CBOE more likely just because they're better connected and they're a larger, more established institution? Or is it just kind of like, okay, one ETF gets approved and then kind of the flood? Or is Gemini, the fact that they got denied in the past, can just kind of be left in the dust because they didn't, you know, they weren't politically connected enough or whatever? Like how exactly does that whole process pan out exactly?
I actually have no idea, and I wouldn't speculate on it.
Okay.
But you know, going back to the Gemini ETF, that ETF was actually going to hold private keys because mm-hmm. Gemini has their own robust cold storage solution that they, you know, I think that they were going to bring that expertise to their ETF as well. Mm-hmm. And that was before futures contracts were on the market, if you remember. So that ETF was definitely going to be...
Oh, wow. That was that early, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was in March, I believe, March of last year when it got denied, somewhere around there. And so the futures contracts weren't even out yet. They weren't even announced yet. So, you know, just, you know, as far as which one that one was going to hold. And then, you know, as far as the connections, yeah, I would assume that a CBOE has a better shot than a Gemini, mm-hmm. Just because they're in the industry. But, you know, I really don't know. I do like seeing the names that I'm seeing coming into Bitcoin, CME, CBOE, mm-hmm. NASDAQ. You have the recent announcements in Switzerland with an exchange over there. You're just seeing it pop up a lot of places.
Spreading pretty quick.
Yeah, it is. And you actually see less of this blockchain talk now and really a lot more talk about Bitcoin itself, which is kind of what matters most.
Yeah, I think that's particularly exciting because it's seen as the most hardened and inevitable of the assets. Like there's no, and I think that's kind of the big I think that's the whole selling of Bitcoin in the first place, is that nobody's changing that monetary policy. You know, like, it's just, it's stuck. So it's out there and people are running the code, and that little economic system is just going to keep running and keep growing. And it's just fascinating.
Absolutely.
I got a question. What do you, this is more on the speculation side. But tell me what you see 10 years out, if you don't mind. Like, how do you see Lightning Network being a basis for a reference rate? Like kind of, and maybe you don't have like more of the technical knowledge for some of these things, but like, I think it's going to mirror in a lot of ways, aside from the underlying asset being very different than the traditional markets. I think we're going to see a very analogous growth from Bitcoin at the core to a lot of traditional mechanisms being built on top of it. And I think, you know, the Lightning Network reference rate as a means of standardizing interest rates essentially in a financial market on top of it is a key. I think you're absolutely right, and that's why I'm so excited about it. But kind of take that a little bit further. Like what do you see in financial markets? Like, what do you think is the next step from that? And how is the legacy market built out from something like a base interest rate?
Sure. What I really see for the future is I see things from a Bitcoin-denominated point of view. And so I don't think about the exchange rate at all. I'm thinking about how can we build fixed income agreements on Bitcoin so that, you know, we can build a capital market in a more trustless, decentralized way, with you know, your node being able to verify what's going on instead of relying on credit rating agencies or earnings reports or, you know, anything that can be, that has to be trusted in the current capital markets. And so, you know, I don't know if you can build on-chain bond and equity markets and futures markets and swap markets, but, you know, I don't see why not. Because if we can figure out the interest rate of an overnight rate equivalent, you know, in traditional finance, the overnight rate is the shortest duration rate that you can have. In Bitcoin, theoretically, you could have a block to block or a second to second interest rate. There's unlimited possibilities there. So if we can build an interest rate framework, we can build, I don't know, time lock swaps, and then you can build out a yield curve on Bitcoin, and you know, maybe a lot of the lending and equity agreements are done in you know, with signatures on pieces of paper, but and that still have to be upheld in courts of law, but I think that that adding Bitcoin underneath the agreements can make everything work. Just work better and really turn, you know, finance on its head.
It's gonna be really crazy to see what things can be built. It's amazing what complexity you can get out of like 7 or 8 key building blocks, and with escrow, like built in like chain based escrow, and even off chain, like I mean, a lightning routed payment is an HTLC off chain, but it's exactly that. Essentially, it's held in escrow until some agreement or some signature essentially is met in some way. But obviously, in a normal payment, it just happens instantly because you exchange a key with the final person, and then that hash cascades down the routes to the originator. But it will be really interesting to see what you can build with that, particularly with swaps or holding that value locked until, you know, contracts come to fruition or expire and that kind of thing. It's going to be really crazy to see how much is actually buildable within the actual script. I think so much of it will actually be essentially programmable. It will obviously take a long time, but
I don't see why not. And
yeah,
you know, hopefully we'll get more eyeballs on this and more really smart people to come in and help code this stuff, which, you know, that's not going to be something I'm going to be able to do. And but I'm excited to work with, you know, the rest of Bitcoin and, you know, see how we can all build this thing together.
Yeah. Yeah. And it'll be good to have your brain on it so you can figure out how it applies and where best to direct and discuss what development should do. So, and you know, maybe if you got anybody else, know anybody else with the CFA charter who becomes a Bitcoin geek, point them at the podcast. Maybe it'd be good to learn some history of cypherpunks and that kind of stuff.
Absolutely, I will.
Cool. I know I got a lot of reading to do about financial instruments and stuff that I think will be key to building a lot of these things. So I'm going to have a whole new thing to dive into. Lots of reading.
And I think you described it perfectly when you're talking about the HTLC, because let's break down each one of those letters. The H is for the hashes, right? And the hashes prove everything, right? Yep. And the TL is your time lock, which is what you were referring to as escrow.
Mm-hmm.
And the contracts are the signatures. And you combine all these components together, and these are financial agreements.
Yeah.
Yeah. HTLCs are bonds. They are swaps.
Yep.
They, you know, that's what they are if you really classify them properly.
They're micro terms. Versions of that, essentially.
Right. Yeah. Right. And so what else can we build, you know, either deriving from an HTLC, within an HTLC, through the script? Possibilities are definitely endless.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm kind of in that boat. I can't come up with a reason it all can't be rebuilt in some programmable contract to some degree.
I can't either.
Yeah. It's like, I feel so much like it's, you know, we're looking at basic SMTP and, you know, 1985 or something, and realizing that this is going to be streaming video one day. It's going to be a long time. We have to sort out how to order lost packets and repair damaged data and manage the streams. Like, you know, there's so many little steps along the way. But I think the Lightning Network is a perfect next step for that, is adding a layer. And actually, do you know any, have you seen about channel factories? Have you heard about that proposal?
I'm trying to grasp it again. I said, I've read the proposal, and it's a little bit above my head. Like I said, these things take me a few months, but I'm trying to understand it as well.
Yeah, it seems like it's really crazy, because it's kind of a more elaborate multi-signature scheme where, like, let's say 4 or 8 participants can get together, like participants particularly like financial institutions or more reliable like groups of nodes that like commonly coordinate between each other, and they create this kind of elaborate shared channel scheme where they basically open up, they break their funds and open up channels with everybody else in the group. And what it allows them to do is basically close channels after they open it up with everybody else inside their little what is essentially just like an 8 of 8 signature agreement. They can then branch out into Lightning channels, but what it allows them to do is close the Lightning channels back out into the actual Lightning network, back to their little 8 of 8 multi-signature, and then reorganize their channels among themselves without ever going back on chain. There's still just an 8 of 8 on chain that is holding in the same kind of non-custodial agreement of, okay, anybody can close this if there's some sort of a problem, but we can actually close and open channels to the Lightning network, as long as we have the majority of this party basically moving these channels around off chain. So it's kind of another order of magnitude in scaling and turns Lightning Network into essentially layer three and this new channel factory thing in the layer two. So it's kind of crazy to see that kind of thing unfold. And I think multi-signature, like elaborate schemes like that, is going to be it's so exciting to see what they can build with this. I mean, that's just layer two is already turning into layer three, it seems like.
Yeah. And so, this is the type of innovation that is so exciting. And to go back to what I said earlier about, you know, the Bcash stuff on Twitter and all that, the reason I just kind of dismiss it and look past it is what is actually happening on Lightning? Look at these brilliant people. You know, Trace May refers to them as polymaths.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're talking about some of the smartest people in the world working on Bitcoin, working on Lightning, and working on these solutions. And then you have, you know, these chirpers basically saying nothing and adding no value to the conversation. And that's why, you know, I don't waste time with it. I don't really pay attention to it so much. I'm trying to learn from really smart people. And there have been people that reach out to me on Twitter, either directly or publicly, and they bring an interesting point that teaches me something about Bitcoin or how Lightning works, or, you know, proposes an answer or a solution. And that's the type of engagement that I'm looking for.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost honestly, like, there's so much venom in like the kind of competition between some of these coin communities, so to speak. And, it's almost just kind of sad that I feel like they're missing out on some of the most exciting stuff going on, because and they're trading it for retweeting your Lightning Network reference rate, which is just a awesome and simple way to think about how to cryptographically prove a rate of return on any principal offered up to the Lightning Network, and trying to claim it some fractional reserve interest rate scheme for controlling financial markets and Bitcoin and bank takeover. It's so baseless and has nothing to do with what you were actually talking about. I just can't think. Did they read two sentences? Did they
know what I probably should never have used the word LIBOR. But honestly, I'm going to stand by what I said about LIBOR, which is the way that LIBOR banks publish a rate to each other and then average it and then publish it out. Mm-hmm. Is an interesting framework. It doesn't mean that it's going to be a centralized thing. I'm talking about everything that's cryptographically provable and verifiable and transparent, and, you know, not some sort of centralized panel of only 20, you know, banks that get to decide the interest rate that the world resets off of, you know.
Yeah.
But what can you do? I think if people read the article, they would understand that.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be pretty blatantly clear that that has nothing really to do with what you're talking about.
Right. Right.
I think it's just they see LIBOR and, you know, the pan banging comes out and they're just upset. It's a little sad, but, you know, people, they're going to see what they want to see. So.
Yeah, and it's okay, honestly. What I'm thrilled about is that people did actually read the article. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, they want to explore these ideas more. Mm-hmm. And it's already underway. So that's exciting to me.
Yeah. I just want to ask, just to make sure, I know you seemed totally on board with it, but do you mind if I keep digging into these articles on the podcast? Because I really love your work and I'm excited about seeing stuff coming in the future.
By all means. This was a lot of fun. I listened to your reading of the Bitcoin Risk Spectrum. I really enjoyed it and your commentary afterwards, and I sent it to some people that I knew wouldn't want to read my article but would rather listen to it.
Awesome.
And I think it's a great concept, and absolutely, by all means.
Cool. I just want to make sure. Thanks, man. I guess we're hitting close to an hour here. Is there anything else you specifically thought about wanting to cover, or?
I think we covered a lot. I'm really honored to be on here and put some of these ideas out there. You know, I hope your listeners enjoy it, and, you know,
I think they will.
Willing, willing to provide some feedback on any ideas that anybody has, because this is Bitcoin. Nobody gets to control any part of the process by themselves. So
yeah,
you know, that's the beautiful thing about it.
Yep. Awesome. Awesome. Well, you got something you want to plug? I know you're at time value of BTC, right? That's your tag on Twitter?
That's right. So I'm at time value of BTC on Twitter and the same handle on Medium. I plan to put out more articles about these topics, about LNRR, about some ideas on the financialization, capital market, development of Bitcoin, and I hope you'll read the articles and enjoy and follow me on Twitter.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Be sure to tag me so I don't miss them.
Absolutely.
All right, man. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. This was a blast. Everybody, be sure to follow him. This was great. Thanks a lot, man.
Of course. Let's do it again soon.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. All right. Take it easy.
Bye.
And there we have it. This will close the episode for today. I hope you guys enjoyed that discussion about financial markets on top of Bitcoin and Lightning with Nick Bhatia. I will be sure to tag him and give links to the other work in the post and the show notes for the podcast. We will be back tomorrow with another Crypto Economy Quick Read. Until then, if you would like to support the show and help keep this thing alive and running, you can always donate to my Bitcoin address that I will leave in the show notes in the post. And, of course, you could also go ahead and get your Bitcoin Trezor hardware wallet and secure all your crypto with one of the best hardware wallets that is out there, the Trezor, using my affiliate link, which I will have posted with the Bitcoin address as well. And I actually did get another donation just the other day. Thank you so much to everyone who has donated to help me pay for the time and expenses associated with this. I hope you have gotten some value out of it. And if you don't, or if you are not able to, or don't really feel like contributing any money, please share the show and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes so you can keep up to date on all this stuff and keep hearing about all the cool shit happening in the crypto economy. All right, guys, we will close that one here. Thanks so much for listening. This has been the Crypto Economy Podcast, and I will catch you tomorrow. Take it easy, guys.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.